The Hello Careers podcast explores a system developed to align business needs with education and training. It's proven to be invaluable for dozens of businesses and people looking to create a new life for themselves. We are firm believers that you must screen for attitude and train for aptitude. We're unpacking our insight to help you build partnerships and earn public support for an age-old way of learning a skill, apprenticeship. We'll address issues such as, where there's a skills gap, is there an education and training gap? How do you respond to a tight labor market? What happens when the major employer pulls out of your community? If you're looking to create an apprenticeship program or curious about what to do next, this show could be just the thing you've been looking for. I'm your host, Mark Sylvester. Now, let's get started and talk with the team. Well, welcome back to the show, Michael and Dan. I love how our conversation has been going so far. People have listened to the first episode, or our last episode. We talked about the methodology. Yet we focus on this idea of communicating. We need to build partnerships, and we need to communicate to them. Well, what is it we want to communicate? We want to talk about benefits. So what I'd like to talk about this episode is, what are all the benefits of this program? And I know you talked about launch and learn, Dan, and you've probably learned some benefits that have happened that you didn't predict up in advance. So let's spend this time talking about benefits and how important that is to the LEA, and I'm going to drop my own buzzword here, which is the local education agency community. So what's in it for those folks?
Well, I think this is really a great way to inform you as an administrator, as a teacher, about what are the emerging skills that are valued by your local companies. But that's what you need to inform curriculum and stay relevant with your curriculum. And that's also the hardest thing for a teacher or administrator or a school to really stay in touch with, is how do I stay relevant with my curriculum so that the school's product, which is a student, is valued.
That just feels like a mammoth task, especially as we're thinking about tech, right? And how things have changed so quick. I mean, they changed since we started the show, right? It feels like things are, and that's a big burden to put on them. So the benefit then of this program for the LEA is that you're thinking about that.
Yeah, because no teacher wants to revise their curriculum. It takes years to implement a curriculum and then to go and revise it again. It's just, you know, starting the whole process over again. So how do you help them in informing them what types of things could be beneficial to them? Because you want to, you know, how is this going to benefit me? What I know, what I'm doing now is working. My tests tell me that it's working.
Right.
So you have to create that return on investment for the teachers where they can actually see and, you know, poke it, prod it, show them, not tell them what could be the value of adapting their curriculum.
So Dan, for the business community, because you were the one having to make those phone calls to them, and before you had a cohort, right, you were just talking about the imagined benefits. How did the expected benefits line up to what actually has happened? And what are you finding are the most, let's say, the top three benefits for business?
I think a lot of the benefits were similar to what I thought. I think a lot of the company's job openings weren't for people with no experience. They were all looking for the people with 2 years of experience, but what was being created from community college was people with 0 years of experience. So I knew that one of the big benefits is going to be a whole new set of people for the employers that they can feel comfortable bringing on board through apprenticeship, that they no longer have to have this gap of 2 years of experience. I think the other thing we're learning, we're following up twice a month with all of our apprentices of how's it going, and at the same time, all the supervisors, all the journeymen, how's it going in the program. And I think what we're finding is the next time we do this program, there's certain things that we're going to include upfront and other things that are going to be customized, because only one company wants this and that. And I think we have to figure out how we determine what's in our core curriculum and what's actually on the on-the-job training that's specific to an employer.
That experience is really the benefit for both the business and the school systems, because that's what's usually missing from any type of academic study of a discipline.
The practicum.
And it's the toughest thing to incorporate within a school or classroom environment. So being able to set up that relationship through apprenticeship between the business, where they're willing to offer that type of experience, is invaluable to a school. Because how do you set up those relationships between a school and a business? How do you make it a valuable relationship for both sides? The school wants to get an opportunity for their students for an experience, but the business wants an employee. They want a return on investment too.
I'm guessing that an important part for an organization that's wanting to do that, and an important part for you, are going to be case studies. And because you've built these relationships, and it wasn't teach them, put them in the position, and then leave. You're actually talking to them 2 times a month. That's going to be a challenge when you scale more.
Correct.
Right?
I think part of what we've learned is there's ways you can use technology to get the ongoing voice of the customer, but one of the things we're doing is just a phone call.
Right, right. No, exactly.
A low-tech way.
Right.
Because people will answer through a phone call. When it's just an online survey, you'll push it off. So that's another way we're learning, is how do we get the data quickly but not be delayed? And that's part of the launch and learn.
And that's also going to feed into the case studies, because you know these people, you know how it's working, you know. I mean, it's that, and again, it's still nascent, right?
Yep.
And so you're learning what you need to do. What's in it for the public sector?
Well, we're creating jobs.
Creating jobs.
You know, and that's really where this iterative process of getting that feedback loop going between the employer and the employee and making sure it's supported. That's what your public sector is all about. You know, that's what they should be supporting. And those are the building blocks of your economy. You know, what are the jobs out there? And do you have thriving businesses that can support those people so that the lifestyle that you want to see in your community is supported?
I think it's important when Michael just said creating jobs versus filling jobs. We created jobs. They weren't openings that we just gave from like a union hall of people for a job. We actually did the dialogue that they said, okay, I will grow in this area with this type of person who normally I wouldn't have brought in.
So give me an example of that, because that's I kind of feel like we buried the lead. Like, the thing is creating jobs, right?
Yes.
We didn't talk about that at the very head, but that is the primary benefit, right? It's creating jobs and getting a workforce so that these businesses can grow, which is the tax base and all of the things that happen with that. We know when people have jobs, our crime rates go lower. There's all kinds of good things that happen when we have the job, right? And that's the hard part, is figuring out, well, what jobs do we need? And you said, well, let's create them. So give me an example of that conversation.
Sure. So I'll talk about an IT service provider in San Luis Obispo. I told him what we're doing in terms of the background. He says, I have a bad experience of hiring anyone that doesn't have 2 years of on-the-job training. So I said, well, let me tell you how selective we were. And I said, in the first 2 months, we'll have half the normal salary. And if you're not happy with the person, give them back to me, and I'll find another home for them. So we did that 27 times, and only in one case did we need to find another home, and we found another home for the person in a couple weeks. But from the employer's perspective, it's like, oh, you did the steps to really find someone amazing, and you're willing to stick your neck out to say, this person really is good, and I'll give you my version of a guarantee. They're not used to that.
So notice how we're using the grant money to create a business incentive and take the risk out. That's a worthwhile use of your one-time money to build value proposition. to build that credibility of your product, which in this case, apprentices. So most of the jobs that are in any region, there's really a hidden job market out there. So there's the jobs that you'll see on Indeed or Monster, or that have been posted on CalJobs or whatever your workforce development board job menu is. But then there's the hidden job market. And I think everyone can hear a story of a business person meeting someone who really impressed them and wanting to lure them to their company. So that's the scenario, and that's the strategy that we took with these apprentices, that we wanted to screen for attitude, train for aptitude, find really good quality candidates who would impress these businesses so that they would want to take them on. Otherwise, their competitor would take them.
There's something also there that is, it reminds me of when I was looking for salespeople, and it was this aptitude idea, this attitude idea. Like, was there someone at a clothing store who was an amazing salesperson? Like, they were like, oh my gosh, could I teach them to sell software? Yeah, probably. It's hard to teach someone how to just have that right attitude, to your point. So you also then mitigated the risk in this first 27, right?
And yes. We embraced the hybrid nature of people's background. The more someone has a diverse background, the better. Because if someone worked in customer service and loves IT, that's going to be an even better fit than someone who just loves IT, because they have multiple skills. We love, and employers really like the fact, you are a stay-at-home mom who's getting back into the work environment. All of your life experiences to date are extremely valuable because they helped you in your attitude, and now you have the aptitude.
I think the over-specialization is actually a bad thing in trying to get yourself more employable. Hybrid skills, hybrid viewpoints, multiple backgrounds, that's increasingly what businesses are looking for. And so by adding on these tech skills to somebody who has maybe a background in performance and theater arts, and then they're a software tester, you have somebody who's an excellent communicator. They're gonna know how to tell the developing team that their code is broken.
And
give them those
creative
skills to become quality assurance. Yeah. They are already proven that they can be detail-oriented. They had to work with the director. They had to help out with the whole screen with getting the production moving. That's a great crossover skill to bring into a quality assurance job.
You had mentioned moms coming back into the workplace, and I just had a recent example of someone who was very, very frightful of going back because how much things have changed. She's only been out for 3 years. I'm not thinking of someone who's been out for, 10 years, but just 3 years. It's all different. I don't know what I'm going to do. And actually, she becomes an ideal candidate for you.
I think what we did, knowing our target audience, which is the people with the great attitude skills, when we did our marketing, we said no experience required. We did everything possible to not say these were IT or software testing jobs. Called it tech on purpose, because tech is broad and tech doesn't sound scary, where they're not self-selecting, I can't do that. And so that really helped us. For our software testers, 47% are women. And in tech, that's a breakthrough. A lot of computer science grads are 15% women. We're almost 50%.
Yeah, that's another show when we talk about women in tech and STEM and all of that.
It's marketing to say the employers would love to have people with that breadth of experience.
Right.
But how do you get people to say, the potential apprentices to say, I think I could do that?
The businesses across the board were telling us we can't find motivated problem solvers.
That's great wording.
I love that. Motivated problem solvers. That's my life.
So that was sort of our light that we were looking for, that when we were screening people and going through and building this program, that we were really looking for, regardless of your background, are you a motivated problem solver? Can you adapt to this? are you a relentless learner and are willing to go down this path?
I think we found our first ancillary product that we can put on the website is a t-shirt that says motivated problem solver. Like, I would think these students would probably want to wear one of those, right? I'd be proud to wear one of those.
But you see how that works no matter where industry goes? That's a valuable core.
Absolutely. It's agnostic, right, in terms of what industry it is. One of the other things that you told me that the business has really appreciated, and it's really tough, is if I've got to import talent, but this program works on local talent. So it's people are already here. Tell me more about why that became so important.
You know, in San Luis Obispo, and I think across the nation now, unemployment isn't the problem. It's underemployment. But you've got a job, or maybe you're doing a couple of jobs to make all your ends meet. So how do you create a program or a strategy that helps take these underemployed people and get them into the areas where there are gaps in skills and really where employment is needed? It's a tight labor market out there. So how do we bring people from dead-end jobs into careers where there is opportunity?
I'm going to guess, take me back to how you got the 900 plus applicants, because you specifically were playing into their mindset. Was it ads? Was it, how did you get the word out?
So our first step was to get the word out in the business community that this is coming, because and it's a good source of feedback of the business community thing. Is this a good idea? The way we knew we were onto something is everyone we talked to in the business community would have by name of at least one person they thought should sign up for the program.
Oh,
that was key. So when our local newspaper did an article that they held back for the Sunday paper, they put it on Facebook earlier the following week. 200 people in a row on Facebook directly shared it by name to the person that they thought should apply for the program. Mm. But it went viral because everyone knew of someone. This is exactly what person X needed in their life right now. And we were intelligent how we used our funding, because the tagline, the newspaper said, this is your ticket into tech, and they pay you to learn.
Wow.
Earn and learn. That's the secret of apprenticeship.
I love it. So figuring those secrets out. I love also that we know that there's paid audience, there's organic audience, and then there's earned audience. Earned audience is the one we want.
Yes.
Because sounds like that's what you got.
Yeah. Earned media.
Yep.
Combined with targeted Facebook ads.
Yep. And then getting everybody to share them. That was just, that was brilliant. Tell me then also how you got these businesses to create positions that didn't exist. Because I'm thinking as a business owner, I mean, creating, you know, new slots. I've got this work. But how did you have that conversation and have it go so well?
Well, I think to some degree, you look at companies who have openings, but then you look at, well, their openings wanted 5 years of experience. And I'm thinking, well, you're going to have a hard time filling it. You can also look, how long has this job been open? So the data person in me says, if you see a lot of openings that have been open for a long time, there's a fundamental problem. And then in the dialogue, we say, well, what if we tried this? And if you don't like it, that's fine. You can give it back. And then what ends up happening is they realize, oh, I like that. Can I have more? And then that's our second cohort to give them the second crop. But the first time you do anything in entrepreneurship, you kind of have to go over the top. So we did that. We did everything over the top to have credibility. And the second time, we're not starting from scratch. But to me, when we do our second cohort, we'll have a lot more applicants than we had last time, because everyone who's in the program is going to have all their friends
all their
wanting
buddies,
to sign
yeah,
up.
Right, right, exactly. Tell me, Michael talked about the hidden job market earlier. So can I make a connection here that there are hidden job openings?
Oh, sure. Sure, because I think some of the companies on an ongoing basis, well, they'll say, we're always looking for good people. But what they have to say is, they're good people that our competitors will get unless we're part of this.
Got it.
That's a unique point in our program, in that many times apprenticeships are single employer apprenticeships, where it's one company decides to work with the state of California or the federal government to create a registered apprenticeship, and it's just that one company and they dictate what the processes are. Ours is very unique in that we're a multi-employer program, and we are also the local education agency. The County Office of Education is working with multiple employers to define what are these common entry-level job for this apprenticeship. And in our case, it was IT networking and software testing.
So if we ever want to get to where Switzerland has 40% of the businesses, you can't work with just one, you can't work with just one industry, right? But you've picked the right one to start out with because it's attractive, it's high paying. Mm-hmm. There's some obvious holes. This will keep you busy for a little while. Which brings me to curriculum. How did you decide? I'm going to answer my own question. You went and talked to the businesses. How did you figure out the curriculum?
Well, what really helped us align with the curriculum and the business needs was, especially in the IT world, looking at what certifications the businesses would value. So there became this conversation of, I'll keep on having this conversation about taking someone on with limited experience. We then asked them, or they were asking us, when can I have billable hours with this person? Because the business wants a return on investment.
Of course, sure.
They're willing to take a risk, but what's the return on investment? And so it became a point of aligning with those certifications that really told them that, oh, I know this person has the skills where I can put them on the floor, I can put them in front of a customer, and I know they can solve some help desk tickets on the IT side or on the software testing side, that they know the procedures and protocols to help run a test.
So then working backwards, it was, here, we know what the job wants, what the requirements are. We know what the requirements for the certification are. Let's go and backfill that, figure out what the curriculum needs are.
Yes.
You mentioned earlier a word I'd not heard yet, which was a registered apprenticeship program. Is that a thing?
Yes. So anybody can have an apprenticeship. You can say, oh, I've got a protege, or Donald Trump did it with his apprenticeship. So wasn't registered though. So the state of California has always had registered apprenticeship programs. There's a division of apprenticeship standards. Apprenticeship in California and the nation is really dominated by your traditional trades. So you have your unions in there. And part of what the Community College Chancellor's Office was trying to do with the California Apprenticeship Initiative was to expand the apprenticeship model into new sectors that would be good, that would really be beneficial for the apprenticeship strategy. And so that's where I think technology, with its rapid change and evolution, I think the on-the-job training and the learn-and-earn model is a ripe area for developing registered apprenticeships.
So I hadn't understood that before. That makes a ton of sense.
And that adds an additional certification to
right?
it. Because the state of California or the federal government are then certifying that these people got this much experience with this company at this point in time here. And so they then have a portable certificate that says that they can take throughout California or the nation saying, yeah, this person's experienced now. Because that's really the trick. How do you get someone
right
into the job market when experience is your barrier?
One of the points you were asking earlier about the certifications, our initial approach that we tested with employers and we shifted based on employer feedback was to start the on-the-job training with minimal amount of certifications up front, but at a low cost to the employer. And a lot of the pushback is, you're putting too much risk on me right now because I want to put them through the paces after they have these certifications under their belt and really give them an interview, not just on their soft skills, but on what they actually know. And so we front-loaded our certifications specifically so that we have credibility from the employers that in those 14 weeks you did some amazing things. If we didn't have the certifications, we would have minimal credibility that we were able to take a non-IT person and create an IT person in 14 weeks.
And during that 14 weeks, there were ample opportunities for the business to be inside and meet the people and start to get to know who they were.
Yes, the dance began early.
Right, which, so they get a sense of who the, stay with the dance, you know, who the better dancers are, right? In that, as it turned out, you had 27 great dancers, so, you know, who knew that you were going to have such good success? And I think it's probably because of the screening process.
Well, I think what's interesting, when the employers came back, they said, oh, he's that person in the back corner that asked those great questions when we were pitching. So they, you know, they were really tracking when they were talking with the class, who was interacting, who was engaged, and they already had their list of who they wanted to hire at the end of the process.
Yeah, my radar would be lit. I could imagine going into that room of fish, so to speak. You had said, how long was it going to take them to be able to get billable hours? So now I've got my 14 weeks. Now they come on and I've got some onboarding time. And I know, because you're talking to them two times a month, do you have a sense of what that period of time looks like? Is it another 14 weeks or is it shorter than that?
Well, I think that's how we came up with using the grant money to do a wage offset for the businesses for the first 2 months, of sharing the cost of those employment wages for the first 2 months and calling that sort of their probationary period.
Oh, got it.
And that was from the employers saying that's a good amount of time. I'll know pretty well within 1 month, and 2 months I'll really know. But that was their number telling us.
What was their out?
They could say, I want to put this person back in the apprenticeship pool. And I made that offer to them. If it wasn't a good culture fit in the current position.
So we're standing by our product.
Right, right,
and
right.
And we're also, you know, kind of a money back guarantee, and we're putting some skin in the game as well. So that's what built the relationship, because really it's a new innovative program. What's our credibility? This is our first prototype. We've got to put it out to the market. We've got to be able to get those taste tests back.
So someone might be listening to this episode a year from now, but for this episode, how many weeks or how many months has it been that your first cohort has been in the market?
Many of them, it's like probably month 3.5, 4, something like that.
Yeah, about the fourth month right now, because November and December was when we placed the majority of them. And then others began right after Christmas break.
And your indications now are?
Oh, they're very positive. I think we've built the credibility that these people are incredible performers, and really we're having to size up how big is our effort just to provide the second round of people to our current companies, much less add additional companies.
Right. That was my next thing, is if you got a great product, everybody wants it. Now we have a new problem, right?
Yes.
Our new problem is I don't have enough product. So how many students are you looking at in the next cohort?
Well, I think our grant is for a total of 50, and we already have 27 of the 50. So it'll be at least the same. I would say it would be at least the same size as what we did.
Then is it also fair to say that those people are kind of already placed, because the existing job, the existing relationship you have with employers, it's like, oh, I'll take another.
I think it's all a question of timing. That's what we're learning, is Michael likes to say is tie it to employer orders. So part of where we're innovating is we might do smaller cohorts every quarter, as opposed to a batch, you know, more like sprints. For this sprint,
how many
people do you have, which is really just in time for the employer, which they really want, as opposed to say only once a year do I get these amazing people.
Which brings us all the way back to being a pop-up university, right? You pop up at the right time. with the right people, with the right skills. You guys, another great conversation getting into all of the benefits of this, which is really going to help the person listening figure out how to tune their program. Because we know, you know, 80% of it's going to be the same, but there's going to be a 20% that's going to be different in different regions, right? All of that. Our next,
it's that iterative process. That's what's going to get you the quality and the responsiveness.
This program is going to be different, right? Because it's just going to work your launch and learn, right? I love that. Our next show, what we're going to do is we're going to talk about working with business partners and potential employers. So we've been talking at a high level, so we'll get down into some more tactics on that. Thanks a lot, guys. Thank you for listening. How will you bring this system to your community and say hello to new careers and goodbye to low-wage jobs? For more episodes, visit hellocareers.org or send us a note to podcast@hellocareers.org. We'd love to hear from you with questions or success stories of how apprenticeship is working in your region. Till next time, I'm Mark Sylvester with Hello Careers.